Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep, and I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with MeUndies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my, which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft sustainable modal fabric thong with no rollback waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to the new Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is the new Bachelor Clues. We are continuing Gore Girl Summer today. And I just want to say that I think we all have these moments in our lives where, you know, we have an idea of what the future might hold. We have hopes and dreams and goals and things we want to achieve.
Bucket lists.
But you never think some of these things are really going to happen. And then they do. These magical moments where somehow something so incredible happens to you that you can't even believe it's real. That is the interview we have for you today.
I still can't believe it's real.
I can't either.
It's, you know, it was a dream of ours and it has come true. That's what my senses are telling me has actually happened, but I'm not positive. It might be a simulation.
The pit provides, as we always say, yeah, it could be a simulation and this is some proof that we have control over it. But we hope you guys enjoy this interview because we certainly did. This is, to me, one of the best things we have ever done in service of our fandom, of our beloved game. And I sincerely hope that everyone out there has as much fun as we did with it. Welcome to the pit. Today, a dream comes true for us down here in the pit as we are joined by a living legend, someone who redefined what was possible in the game and helped alter the trajectory of The Bachelor forever after decimating the competition with her visionary style of play in the pre-Instagram era. She's the author of I Didn't Come Here to Make Friends, Confessions of a Reality Show Villain from 2014. She's the ring winner of Bachelor Season 16. Please welcome to the pit someone who is firmly cemented in any conversation about who is the greatest player of all time, Courtney Robertson.
Hello, party people.
Hello, Courtney.
This is truly an honor for us. You have no idea.
Thank you so much for doing this. We are probably the most excited we've been about any interview we've done so far. You are a legend in our eyes.
Oh, my God. That's the nicest thing I've heard all month. Thank you for having me.
I've got my villain necklace on to commemorate.
I should have worn mine. I didn't get the memo. And I got your book. I wanted to say thank you for sending this to me. It's amazing. It's classic.
Oh, thanks for reading it. We were very curious to know what you might think about some of the strategy and play styles and stuff that we have in there.
I think it's brilliant. I think I needed you guys before I went on my season. What the heck? Where were you?
No, you did not.
Yeah. I don't think you needed too much help at all.
I feel like I'm in a living dream, like watching you hold our book right now. But Courtney, here's something that we do at the beginning of all of our Welcome to the Pit episodes. You have 47.1K Instagram followers. Do you have any idea where you are on the leaderboard of all time?
That is like so weak sauce, I think. I think I'm probably not on any board. I think I'm pretty low on the totem pole, actually. But I guess for me, pre-Instagram, maybe that's not so bad for being an OG.
Yeah, it's actually not weak sauce. It is number 194 of all time. That's out of over 1,000 people. You're between Jacqueline Trumbull from season 22 of The Bachelor and Diggy Moreland from season 13 of The Bachelorette. Great company.
So that's good. So I'm doing something. My algorithm's working.
Yeah, that's right.
You've transcended the pre-Instagram era. I think that's what that means.
Yeah, which is a hard thing to do. Not many players are capable of that. We want to do something that we kind of do with everybody that we talk to who comes on the show. Get some background on your relationship to media before you came into the show. So what did you watch growing up?
You know what? I was a child of the 80s, Dawson's Creek, Saved by the Bell, biggest crush on Zach Morris. Let's see, obviously.
I love Dawson's Creek.
I had such a crush on, was it Pacey?
Yes.
And I was actually
the only option. I'm not Dawson.
How dare you?
No, I was in an elevator with him and his previous ex-girlfriend once, and I was like, oh, I was dying. So I've admittedly been like a couch potato. Like my mom exposed us to like Jaws. We'd do like movie days and, you know, all the scary movies. We did like Cujo. But pretty much we watched a lot of movies and TV. The first movie I ever saw was E.T. So that just might date me.
Interesting. E.T. was great.
A classic.
And what was the first season of Bachelor that you ever saw?
You know, I think Jillian Harris, probably. I probably watched the most of hers. My sister was a big fan. They used to do viewing parties. So I would kind of dip in and out so I could kind of riff with her on things, just so I kind of knew enough to kind of hang with the girls.
But you clearly knew the game, like when you went into it. Was that just from watching the show? I mean, it had to have been, right?
You know, honestly, I didn't really watch that much. I know that sounds so cliche, and a lot of people say that. I wish I would have. I kind of just went in blind.
What?
Yeah, I did. I don't
know. Wait, you had you seen Ashley's season? Ashley Hebert?
Yes. So I did see Ashley's season. That's why I went on, because I saw Ben. I mean, I literally told producers, like, if it's not him, I'm not coming. Because it could have been like Ryan, that guy. And he looked a little bit too short for me. And I just wasn't. So that's kind of why I signed up. I honestly, looking back, I was so naive to the whole thing, but I didn't really go in with the game plan. It just kind of unfolded as I did it.
That's unbelievable. So it was just natural talent. I mean, every once in a while in other professional sports, you see something like this, like a LeBron James or somebody who comes out of high school. No, not beginner's luck, like innate talent that no one else has, like a one in a million kind of, I can play this game from birth. And that, to me at least, is what it sounds like you're talking about.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? I'd like to think so. I didn't have a strategy. A lot of people thought I did. And that's nice. That's really a nice compliment.
You know, it's actually what we call like the fundamental rule of the game for TRR, for the right reasons. Going on only for Ben is very for TRR.
Yeah, I was. And I know people didn't believe me, and they're like, oh, she's like, you know, this model, and maybe she's trying to be an actress. And I was like, you know, I had one of my celebrity crushes is Adam Driver. And, you know, from Girls, you know him, and he looks kind of like, I saw him and I was like, oh yeah, I think him and I could hit it off. And there was an Arizona connection. So.
And what was your relationship to social media when you went on the show? Like, did you have any kind of social media accounts or anything?
So before I started modeling, I did graphic design. So I always liked the creative aspect of social media. I had Facebook. I was on and off Facebook. So I would go on and then I'd delete it. I'm one of those people with social media. Like, I love hate for sure. But I actually had Instagram for the creative element while the show was airing. It had just become a thing and nobody knew it. So like the producers at the time didn't even know of Instagram. And if you go back, or I can send it to you, I was posting pictures at our happy couple, like of our meals, and like you could see like his foot in it and stuff like that. But I had like no followers. It was just for like the artsiness of it.
And so obviously the producers hadn't locked you down yet. They weren't like in control of what you were doing on social media yet.
So we weren't allowed to have Facebook. They made us delete that. We weren't allowed to have Twitter. And so I got Twitter after the show, and Alon Gale really kind of helped coach. He kind of helped coach a lot of people with social media, because look at what he's done. I remember.
What did he tell you to do with social media?
You know what? I remember I was like, I need help writing my bio. And I remember even him visiting me and Ben on the happy couple weekend. And he was like, Ben was like tweeting. He's like, dude, you just got to like send stuff out. And like, he was kind of even coaching him. He's done that for a lot of people. But just like how to craft funny tweets. Like, I mean, I remember there were times where I'm like, can you help me craft a tweet? He wrote my bio for my Instagram and my Twitter.
God, he really, I mean, the more we hear about him, especially in these early seasons that kind of like have defined what it is now, the more I realize like that guy just like understood this at a level no one else does. Certainly that no producers today do.
He did. He definitely was a genius. And I think that he, in my opinion, we had a friendship. I think that maybe there was some guilt there, you know, after this. You kind of get thrust into this world. And I mean, I don't think he got paid to help people with their online presence, but nobody else was there to help. So I think maybe that was part of his role, because he was the one that would call and say, this is what's going to air this week. And so maybe there was a little guilt there, because who knows? That's just my...
Oh, he called you?
Yes. He called me every week.
Interesting.
He heard a lot of the tears, and then... So, but he definitely helped coach a lot of people with Instagram and social media after the fact.
I am so curious about these calls that they do with people when the episode is airing in like what we call like the watch back period.
I know.
And they let you know what's coming. Yeah, you're like, I know. I mean, I'm like, what were those calls like for you? Because I feel like right off the bat, night one, you're already getting a villain edit.
Oh yeah, total, 100%. Yeah. And then I was like, I don't think I should watch this. And I had all my friends over the first night and I was like, oh, like, just like, I can't watch, like everyone's asking me questions. And so I actually stopped watching, but my sister, who's a super fan, would call and tell me like, I'm like, they said this is going to, it's going to be like this. And she'd be like, well, it's still pretty bad. So, yeah, I was not leaving my house very much because the paparazzi were really bad and my relationship was totally on the fritz. So I didn't leave my house a lot. So I was pretty in a dark place. I would just like lay in bed. I remember I'd get the call and be like, how's it going to be this week? And he kind of always would make it seem like it's getting better. And then it wasn't. You know, it got
it's getting better. Interesting.
Yeah. There was at no point did it get better. They made it, in my opinion, actively worse every week. The villain edit, I mean. And it was astounding to watch just like the whole body of work that you turned in that season, because despite, and we're going to get into specifics for sure, but despite a massive villain edit, despite tattle attacks left and right, it was like none of it stuck to you. And I know that you had to deal with the fallout and tabloids and all that after, but like you still won the ring. It's incredible, I think. So before any of that, though, how did you actually get in the game? Did you apply? Were you nominated? How did that work?
So I had, let's see, where do I start? I had gone through a breakup and I was like having one of my wine nights watching Ashley's season. And I was like, probably in a little saucy. And I texted my sister and it was at the end. It was like when she lifts him up from the elbow and I was like, I bet it's going to be him. And so I went online and I looked at the application, texted my sister, do you think I should apply? And of course, she's like, 100%. So I just, and like, I listened to your audio as well, like of the book. It's easier for me, but I just did a couple pictures and I just did a really fast application, like kind of hitting on kind of what you talk about in this book. You kind of know what they're looking for, heartache, you know, just kind of did a fast and dirty application. I wasn't about to go do a video or waste my time on that just because it just seemed like a lot. And then they like called me in like a day or two later because it was just right down the street from my place in Santa Monica.
God, that's crazy.
That worked out perfectly. I wonder how many people like come off a breakup and they're like, fuck it, let's go on Bachelor.
It was probably not the best timing because that guy, I think it was really hard for him. It was hard for us, to be quite honest with you. It's just a unnatural thing to have to watch your ex go on national TV.
Yeah. At least they probably didn't get the scrutiny that they get today, which is like anyone connected to anyone going on the show is going to have all of their shit uncovered.
Yes. And instead, for me, there was stuff that wasn't about me. Like stories would come out and I wasn't allowed to talk to the media until after the show. But like people were like literally going online, like making up stories about me. Like she wore white to my friend's wedding and people would like take it and run with it. Just like really weird stories that just made me look bad, you know?
Yeah. And now because we have TikTok, people can do that and those TikToks will go viral immediately. You don't even need like Us Weekly to try and cover it or something. It's just like anyone can do it. It's really crazy, I think, the environment that exists now for this.
I can see that going viral. She wore white to my friend's wedding. And it's like the person in front of like a picture of you. And you're like, that's not even white. That's a light.
I know. Crazy.
Let's get into your season now. Let's start with night one. You get the sixth limo exit. You come out and you do what we call a standee. You issue a little kind of pre-scripted joke. You say, do you come here often? You run your fingers through Ben's hair. It all goes pretty well. But later that night, you witness history when Lindsay Cox performs the first grand entrance of all time. She rides in on a horse. Were you aware in that moment that history was being made? And what was your reaction to seeing someone come in on a horse? It was the first time anything like that had ever been done.
So I didn't know history was being made. I do now, but in all honesty, I was the last out of the limo and Lindsay was the first in with the horse. So spoiler alert,
oh.
when I was, Actually, maybe this was a gameplay. So from doing commercial auditions in LA, I remembered you either want to go early, be the first in or the last out. So you're the most memorable. And I asked production, can I go last or first? And they said, okay, you got it. You're going to go last. So it aired out of sequence, but obviously with her riding in on a horse. So when I came in, it was like, well, some girl rode in on a horse, and it was like, what? And then she had her little hat. And so, yeah, that's kind of how that played out for me. And then she got the first impression rose, which I wasn't too mad about because for all I knew, I was like, well, yeah, she rode in on a horse. Of course.
Did you know at that time, first of all, let me just compliment you on knowing that going first and last is super important. And that's what I'm talking about, your innate game sense, knowing on night one that you can even attempt to barter with the producers to get one of those rewards is fascinating. But the first impression rose and all that, were you aware of the fact that producers largely are the ones who determine who gets it?
No, I solely thought it was his decision. I didn't really at that point know how much of a hand they had in keeping who, you know, orchestrating. Right. I learned as I went on.
You get your first conversation with Ben later, your mini date, and you say you're only there for him. You do some more hair play, and we get this ITM of you off face saying that you're better than the other women. And whenever I see a line, especially a line like this, which is what I think is the first moment. Well, I guess actually your intro video was the first villain edit part of this, but was this Frankenbitten?
So I'd have to see, did they show what I was wearing? Was it night one or was it a voiceover?
It's a voiceover and we don't even see you saying it.
Then that would probably have been taken from probably not night one, in my opinion. I can't say, I'd have to see what the context was. I do remember, you know, we went till 4 or 5 the first night in the morning. And I remember at one point I was doing an interview and I felt like, uh-oh, I think I overserved myself. I felt a little, woo. So I just like started drinking water and that was it. I was like, I better lock it up because I feel like, you know, I might be getting a little sassy.
That's also very good strategy. We say that in our book that you shouldn't drink at all. But I mean, to even have the wherewithal to be like, wait a minute, it's too much. I need to rein this in or my strategy's out the window. Fucking amazing.
I did. I was like, wow, oh my gosh, girl, get it together. I found myself like, ooh, this is not a good look. So, and then you're up to like 4 or 5. So maybe I said something. I don't remember feeling that way, but
I always think I'm like, well, you might have said like, it's not like I think I'm better than the other women, you know, or doing an impression of someone else. And then they can just cut that little bit.
I didn't even know that they played that. I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds so bad. But I wasn't saying it like in that, definitely not in that, you know.
Context.
Sure. Did you know on night one that you were getting a villain edit? Did you have any idea that was happening?
No, I had no idea until I saw the first episode air. And then towards the end, he was like, they're saying it's going to be bad for you, the producers, to him. And I was like, really? And I was like, I knew there was a narrative that had been forming and they were trying to get me to play into it. And I really wouldn't, just because I was like, no, this is a storyline you're creating. Like, I'm not going to play that card. So it kind of started to click towards the end of when we were in Switzerland.
I mean, they keep telling you that it's going to get better. How do they justify the edit to you? Are they like, hey, we're sorry, but like this might come off this way?
You know, everybody had a different excuse. Like every producer, the person that I got the most in trouble with, I probably still haven't talked to like most of the interviews that I felt like I was, you know, but like one of the main, I think Martin Hilton was like, we thought it was funny. We, you know, Mike Fly said, you know, you saved this show, like you, our ratings were down and it was so boring and you were like the thing that kept it, you know, we kind of had to do it. And everybody had a different after the fact, like kind of spin on it, like what would make them feel okay about it, you know. Mike Fleiss was like, you're famous. I'm like, that's not what I just wanted this healthy relationship. Everyone kind of had a different spin on it, you know.
Yeah. So you go in week one, you go to Sonoma, you get your first one-on-one date. It's a nice picnic out in the Redwood Forest with Ben and his dog Scotch. Goes pretty perfectly. You play an immaculate chemistry game. You get the one-on-one rose. And then you're in an ITM where you say the other girls should watch out because you got the rose, and you do this kind of mad villain laugh and you're twirling the rose between your fingers. Did production ask you to play around with the rose? Were they trying to exacerbate your villainy, or was that all you?
That was definitely me. Eek. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was Was I in the outfit of the date?
I have no idea.
We got to track the outfits better.
Yeah, we caught continuity. And I feel like I did that maybe after the skinny dipping. But I don't know. But yeah, I was told, I think I was like giddy. And I was probably like had a little wind beneath my wings. And I probably was just playing around. And I was so, my friend Amy Bean, she's a producer. And she's like, Courtney, like they would keep me in the interview room for hours. And she's like, you would just come and be like, what do you need from me? Like, I would just try to, I hated doing the ITM. So I'd always just try to give them something so they'd let me go to sleep. And I think that worked against me.
But you were well rested.
Well rested. And then everybody was laughing, like by who I thought, you know, my friends, producers were always laughing, and I got carried away.
Week two, you have a bye week. When you don't have a date, do you have to stay in the hotel? How do you spend your free time?
You do. Yeah. We were in like a high rise in San Francisco, like a hotel. And yeah, you can go to the gym. You have to schedule time in the morning. There's like a sign in sheet. Like you can only go, one person can go at the time. So you're not talking off camera, you know, too much. There's no TV, no books, no magazines. So really you're just sitting around with who's not on the group date or the date.
And despite it being a bye week, that night at the cocktail party, Ben takes you in the secret tunnel that's supposedly used for JFK to be sneaking Marilyn Monroe around. And you emerge on this rooftop and you basically get an impromptu one-on-one. Are you aware that this is set up by producers, that they have to be in concert with Ben to be able to do this?
You know, I thought that he picked that out for me, and I thought it was so cool. At the time, it felt like, oh, he can read the room. Like, I need to get away, you know, carve out a little time for me because he hasn't seen me. That's how it felt. And I kind of thought that maybe they gave him the option and he just picked me to do it. But it was really cool.
Yeah, that could have been.
Maybe, yeah.
I think so. I remember after that same night when Chantel, the member shows up and he said to producers, I hope Courtney didn't see that. And then I heard that and I was like, wow, he really likes me.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen, they just did it this past season with a player named Susie Evans, who was the eventual ring winner. They gave her a very similar rooftop knock knock when she didn't have a date that week. It was her bye week and they gave her that.
That was cool. Yeah.
So week three, you all traveled to Park City, Utah, and you are on a group date going fly fishing. You ITM some great open gameplay speech, which you do all season. You say no one is making moves. They need to up their game. And you catch a fish on the date. And then at the cocktail party, you have what was, in our opinion, one of the best plays all season. You play what we call Make Me Stay, telling Ben that you're having a hard time in this situation. He goes to get the group date rose for you, despite revealing in an ITM that he initially wanted to give it to another player. Did you know in that moment that you got him to change his mind?
You know, I think you kind of stopped me. I don't know. Let me think about this.
Yeah, we're like, this is 20 years ago. what was going through your head?
Yeah. I probably was having a hard time. That was right after the San Francisco thing. And I know I was. I had a hard time the whole time. I was always ready to leave. Like, I always had like my bags ready to go. I don't think that I knew that I was going to get the rose. I didn't really put too much importance on the group date roses because I already felt like I had a target on my back since Sonoma. Once I had that date, I actually wanted like less. I wanted him to help me out and not do that kind of stuff. So I probably was thinking about leaving, to be honest. There's probably some truth to that. I don't know that it was an intentional gameplay.
Yeah.
Were you like, God, oh, my sister's never going to forgive me if I self-eliminate?
I could still get out like unscathed. And I remember the fishing date though, and I felt that way on every, going back to that, every group date, the girls did not engage with him or flirt with him. It was like they were off getting screen time and being cute and playing with each other. And I actually almost felt bad for him. Like, I know that happened on what, the last season of The Bachelorette, right? Michelle was like,
yeah, Michelle Young.
That is a perfect example. Every group date I was on, it felt like that. And I was like, oh, yes, he's there for the taking, you know. And the fish thing, that was a professional fly fisher. They just were like, come over here, we got one on the line. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wait, what? They caught?
You didn't actually catch the fish.
No.
They caught a fish for you and put the fishing rod in your hand that had a fish on it.
I talked about that in my book. And I'm like, here's the thing. Any of those girls could have run over and grabbed the rod. You know, they had professional fly fishers in the bushes all along the river. I don't know how to fish. Do you think I could catch a fish?
I mean, sure. I think you could do anything. I'm like fully believing at this point that at least all of your staggeringly incredible gameplay is 100% real. Speaking of which, you get an ITM later in this same episode where you repeat the phrase winning over and over and over again. And that night at the cocktail party, Emily O'Brien tries to tattle on you saying that you're 4TWR and it doesn't work. And this is really the first time that we see somebody trying to openly tattle against you. And you're going to have to obviously deal with that all season. You had, I think, the best tattle defense of any player in history. Do you have any advice for players who might be facing a tattle attack in the current era? Like, how do you deflect it so well?
You know, I think for me, it was the easiest thing. And I said to him, well, give me an example of what I've done, please. Like, you know, and he said that too. He said all along, he said, I've asked the girls, give me an example. Like, what is she doing? Like, what is so bad? And he said, nobody could come up with one thing that you've done or you've said, because they were really reaching, you know, I think, in my opinion.
Do you think it was because you had that target and they thought maybe you're a front runner, maybe from the tunnel thing?
I think it was a lot of different things. I think it was that I wasn't around that much because I was exhausted. I was in interviews a lot. I think producers were pulling me in, I hate to say it, more than some of the other girls who had more time to, you know, there's only like two interview rooms. And so I just know how much I was in there, and that took me away from the girls bonding in the house. And I think they took that, like they were offended. Like, she doesn't want to hang out with us, or where's Courtney, or she's napping. I need my sleep. I told the girls in Sonoma, like, I need to save some energy. Like, I can't drink all day and just be like my best self the next day. So I really took time to like relax, and that took time away from the girls. So I think that the snarky comments, I know what got me in trouble. It was when I said to KCB, like, how did that taste coming out of your mouth when she read my name off the date card? Yeah. That was a joke. And I'm very snarky in real life. Like, and some people can hang and some people can't. I think in this setting, it didn't really work. I think it really irritated the girls, and I was okay with that too. Like, I kind of pushed their buttons a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's what we call the second audience game, how you interact with the other players. And generally speaking, what you did on that season never works. You, like, any other player who does this gets escorted out of the game almost immediately. Tattle attacks will work against them. And like I said, you just deflected it all. Nothing ever stuck to you.
What am I doing? Like, what, you know, and he was, and nobody would say, like, we just don't like her. And he's like, well, I like her, you know?
Right.
So the next week you all travel to Puerto Rico, you go on a baseball group date, your team wins, and it's a traditional play for time. At the after party, you float this idea of skinny dipping with Ben, but he doesn't bite in that moment. But later, after he eliminates Elise Myers in a one-on-one execution, the producers give you a knock-knock. And this is where you initiate one of the most iconic plays in the history of the game, the Puerto Rican skinny dip. Was this your idea?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
I love skinny dipping. It was always a thing. I've been to nude beaches in Hawaii. Like, to me, it's just like, I think at that point in the show, I kind of forgot that we were being filmed so much. I know that sounds crazy. You just get really wrapped into this bubble. I mean, obviously I knew they were filming, but it wasn't like, oh, this could be a shocking thing for TV. That wasn't a thought. I really just wanted to spend time with him. I did know that we would have time without audio. So that was playing for me because I really wanted to be able to speak freely, you know, without producers there and pulling this aside and kind of molding it. So yeah, but he knew the night before we were going to do it. And then he acted so surprised when I showed up, and that's what really bothered me, you know, cause he was like, oh, she's here. And I'm like, we talked about this, we planned this the night before. And then I looked like cuckoo.
So how do you initiate that? Did you bring it up with the producers the night before and you were like, I have this idea?
Mm-mm. So we talked about it on camera at the end of the group date, the baseball date. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we were sitting there and I just felt like the conversation was falling flat. And it was like very like, you know, like, what's your favorite color? Like, it just wasn't, I was very, a little bit bored. And I was like, gosh, it'd be so fun. Like, I have a little wild side. I was like, wouldn't it be so fun? We could go skinny dipping right now. And he's like, let's do it. I'll do it. Let's go right now on the group, end of the group, or, you know, the group date. The girls are all sitting there. I said, no. I said, how about tomorrow night? And he said, yeah, my one-on-one date is probably going to end early. So it was a plan. And I was like, we talked about it on camera, but what they showed just didn't air that.
He said it's probably going to end early. Like he knew he was already going to break up with the girl. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, it was a plan. I was like, that's a date. Okay. So like,
yeah, it was scheduled.
I had to move on. I had to brought, you know, everything ready to go. And I was sitting around the house with the girls and we had a movie night. They brought a movie in so we can all watch the movie. And I think they were kind of distracting the other girls. So I could slip out the back. And again, the girls just thought I was in an interview room. So
but that was all, like, you had producer help to do all of that, obviously, as you're saying. They literally brought in a movie to distract them. What was the movie? Do you remember?
I don't remember. And I was so excited. My friend Casey would remember, or Jacqueline. I was so jelly because I was like, God, I could just use some entertainment, like a movie, you know. We were in Puerto Rico, so I don't remember. It was like from the hotel or what, but
it was probably like The Shining or something to really get everybody traumatized and scared shitless.
And I think at some point they did during that episode said, like, where's Courtney? They showed, you know.
Yeah.
It was fun though. The skinny dipping, like, I will say, like, it was fun. I needed it. Like, I just needed like a real kind of moment with him. Not that in my real life I go skinny dipping that often. I was a lot younger then, but I needed to see that he was fun and like kind of like shake it up because he was coming across as very serious to me.
Did you plan out like what you were going to talk about in the water? Like, here's my off camera moment. What am I going to ask?
No, I think I really didn't. It just kind of naturally started coming up and it was nice. So we weren't out there for very long, but you know, I mean, he essentially told me like, it's you. And now I have to like kind of go through the motions with all the other girls.
So you knew then he already locked it in and the rest of it was just like faking whatever he had to fake to get through the show.
Yeah. He was like, this is so difficult. Like I have to like, and I told him, I said, I honestly, like, I know Emily's come to you and like, she had just come to him again and tried to talk about me again. And I was like, she's been like, the girls are pretty awful to me in the house. I was like, I'm never going to talk about them to you, but I really hope you can get rid of her soon. Like I can't stand her.
It's amazing. Like the first audience gameplay that you were able to wield in this season is incredible that you could then get The Bachelor to just eliminate people or basically do your bidding it's just fucking fascinating. And then we get to week five, you get another group date. This one has all of you are visiting a local tribe in Panama City to partake in their customs and you do another voluntary nudity play. Was this voluntary nudity play your idea entirely? Were the producers like, maybe you revisit the skinny dipping vibe again?
Yeah, I think that definitely kind of, they were, after that, like, they were like, we should do something in your ITM, like Basic Instinct, where you like, they were like trying to get me like to do kind of salacious things. And I did, I was like, okay, that would be fun. Let's like, let's try it.
Yeah.
But Bennett, I was with Bennett. He was my producer that day. And to be quite honest with you, we were getting dressed. You even see me like, there's a moment I'm like, should I? And the lady that they didn't speak any English, seemed offended at the people that lived there that we weren't doing it. Like they wanted us to do like culturally, and that's kind of what the producer said to me. He was like, Courtney, nobody will see anything. They put two tops on me. They're very beaded. So you really, like, the girls couldn't see anything. He couldn't see anything, but you could see like, oh, okay, she doesn't have a bathing suit on. So that was why I did it.
Yeah, dang. They're like, you're going to offend the culture if you don't do this voluntary nudity play right now.
I was like, I want to be one with the tribe. Like, I'm going to like really just be in this. But they definitely were like, don't worry, nobody can see anything. Even with the skinny dipping, they were like, there's going to be a black, but like nobody will see anything. And then the promo went out to Good Morning America and there was no censoring. You could see everything. And I called Alon and I was like, you guys better fix this. Like, I agreed to, I would do this if everything was blurred out and the one they sent out wasn't. So
that's unreal.
Not cool.
Yeah, really, and I felt like looking back, it was intentional. And I know that they did swap it out. So, because I called and raised hell, but.
Oh, I think of course it was intentional. You're talking about a show that when people have, for whatever reason, a little too much showing here or there, they'll now go in and digitally paint like an extra inch of a bathing suit bottom or top to cover whatever they're trying to cover. Or they'll put a black box on somebody for no reason other than to make them look stupid. I mean, they do definitely pay attention to detail in most cases. Sometimes stuff slips through, but like not that, not voluntary nudity plays for sure. Especially ones they orchestrated.
No, that's an area where you're very intentional.
You guys are like jogging my memory, but the black box in Panama wasn't really necessary because you couldn't see anything. But it did create that, oh, look at this hoe bag, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, they use it to kind of slut shame sometimes.
Trish Snyder, season 5. That's literally the only reason they used it on her.
Oh my gosh, I haven't seen that one. You guys are like legit super fans, like OG. I've got that from your book too.
Yeah, we did write that book.
That you picked that up from the book. Well, she had the first one when she came out in like a thong bikini. It was very scandalous.
Well, now it's like, I feel like it's gotten way less, like less slut shaming and stuff like that. And this is really brilliant, your book. I really think, have you guys ever considered making a game, like card game?
We've considered a wide array of different iterations of the weird knowledge we now have about The Bachelor.
If anyone could pull it off, it would be you guys. Like, you just going back to like, okay, season 5, you could create like a card game that could be a killer stocking stuffer.
Yeah, we'll see.
We have thought about doing a card game with like iconic players on it. And, you know, obviously, you know, you have like Queen Courtney or whatever, you know, you fill in the certain players. But I feel like I completely understand this season a lot more knowing that you already knew you were the ring winner and you're just going through this experience and being like, I'm going to try to have as much fun with it as I can while I have to sort of endure this.
Yeah, that's really nice of you to say. And that probably was a hindrance to me knowing like, okay, like, I think it's me. Like, he kind of just told me it was, and I kind of just took that for face value because he was so sincere. Mm-hmm. And seemed very conflicted. Like, and in that moment, I remember saying to him, like, just explore your options. Like, if this is us at the end and we are truly engaged, I don't want you to resent me for like, explore your options, you know?
Oh, interesting. All right. Week 6, you go to Belize and you get a one-on-one date. It is a plain historical monument, Mayan temple picnic. And you expertly play this Make Me Stay, saying the spark is gone because you're seeing him with these other women. And it works. You get the rose. One of the best Make Me Stays in history. Perfectly timed.
Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. Mm. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of Me Undies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with Me Undies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my which is not what this ad is about. But I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no roll back waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the SkinSafe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you.
And then unbeknownst to you, the group date that week sees three players all tattle attacking you without you being there to defend. And this ends seasons for most players, but not you. You are at the rose ceremony waiting for Ben to call the names, but he asked you to talk before it starts. What was that moment like? Did you think he was sending you home at that point?
I was a little shocked when he pulled me. I didn't realize that that was a thing. And I remember I had said something to him about wanting to feel special or like, you know, like, and I remember thinking, oh, maybe this is what he's doing this to make me feel special, like to set, make me feel set apart. Cause I had said that losing the spark thing. And I think that's kind of how I took it. And that's kind of what he made it seem like to me, but he also was like, he needed a reason to do it. So he was like, are you going to stay if I keep you? You know? And I said, yeah, cause I really was considering leaving. But I think part of me, this is me being honest, part of me knew me saying that would probably, I'd get more out of him, you know?
Yes, of course.
I just needed more. Like, I was like,
it's brilliant strategy.
Like, I think that was somewhat strategic.
Somewhat. I think it was perfectly strategic. I mean, it worked, obviously. And in this moment, you find out that these other three players on this group date did a group tattle. How did that make you feel? Like, did you feel, were you mad at these other players? Did you view it as like, this is all just part of the game. They're playing their game. I'm playing mine. We'll see who wins. What was your reaction to it?
You know, I don't think I knew until after. I think you just reminded me of that. I don't know that I knew then that that happened. So that is a testament to him for sticking to his guns, which means a lot, you know. I think they were calling me the Black Widow though at that point, right? I think KCB was like, I'm going to stick her like a bug. I knew that they were all talking all this jazz about me the whole time. So I was just really not focused on them. I just wanted at that point, Emily to leave. And I remember I had said that thing in Puerto Rico and then I'm like, God, she's still here. I'm still having to deal with her. Mm-hmm. You know? So I was so ecstatic that she left that night. That was right. In Belize. Mm-hmm. They put her on the boat and she just.
Week 7, you travel to Scottsdale, Arizona for hometowns and you have the 4th hometown. I'm not sure if that was filmed or whether you knew what order it was filmed, but you have this fantastic meeting of the family. You get what we call the glow from the family all around. They seem to be on board. But the most important thing to us that happens is arguably the greatest hometown round in history. You take Ben to this park and you have an impromptu wedding with an officiant in a little gazebo and you make him write out these vows. You write out vows, essentially giving him this rehearsal for the final rose ceremony, future casting in real life. And you, what we call love level 4, you tell him you love him. You obviously needed help from the producers to do this. Was it your idea initially to do this fake wedding?
So I was like, I think it was Belize. They pulled me aside and they were like, let's talk about your hometown. It was a lawn. Let's talk about your hometown date. And they said, can we get a helicopter? I'd like to go fly over. And so I gave them like a list of things and they're like, well, we thought you could take him to a golf course and hit some balls. I was like, no, I was like, I do not want to do anything cliche in Arizona. We're not going hiking. That's not something I would do. And so I gave them a list of like my favorite restaurants and places. And I threw out this, it's a great brunch spot and people can rent it out to get married there. It's where I did one of my first modeling shoots. And so I said, I'd like to take him to the farm. This is the place I've always wanted to get married. We could do a picnic. And then they brought up the whole officiant thing. And I didn't realize it was going to feel like until I was there. I was like, holy mackerel, like, are we married? Like, this felt really real. I was like the most nervous I'd been the whole time.
Yeah, it seemed real.
Because you didn't know if the officiant was real?
No, I was like, are we not getting married? Like, I literally was like, should I call my parents? My dad's going to be pissed.
Should I call my parents?
It totally felt real until the officiant at the very end says something like, you know, if this had been a real ceremony, I would now pronounce you man and wife, but you can still kiss. Like, that's it. Everything else in it is completely the way a wedding goes. After that, you move on to the second round of playoffs, fantasy suites. You get the third one, or at least that's how it's presented in the document. And in this fantasy suite round, Ben brings up the idea that the other women didn't think you were there for the right reasons. These are kind of the residual effects of that tattle attack. And this is the first time that you start to lean on the idea that the process itself is making you behave in ways that you wouldn't normally, making you more competitive or whatever the case might be. And it works. The fantasy suite goes well, but then later producers bring back Casey Bogoski, who was eliminated in the prior round. They literally bring her to Switzerland to plant the seeds of doubt in Ben's mind again. You still get the rose, obviously, but at that point, were you mad at all at the producers for flying her there and trying to, it seemed like, purposely sabotage your relationship?
I didn't know that happened till later. But I remember he was, you know what? I think I knew one of the next dates we had, he told me. And it was just a quick conversation, but he was so pissed because when that scene happened, he was coming back from our overnight. So here he was exhausted and we've had this great night where we kind of talk about everything and he shows up to his door and he's like, what? Like, why, you know, like, she's there. So I knew, and that's how he told me he felt about it, you know? he was just more mad that they would even do that. I wasn't worried that like, oh, maybe he'll keep her.
Did you guys ever openly talk about like producers fucking with you? Did any of you, you and the other players or you and Ben?
I think like the process felt on that. Like my best friend, Casey Steamer, like you don't really get time to talk off camera much, to be honest. So that's why the overnight is, I hate to say it, so cliche, is so important because you can speak freely. And then I remember thinking like, I wonder if they have cameras in here. Like, I wonder if they can hear us. Like,
yes.
I would think that they, right?
They do and can, and they just don't air it to keep the illusion of the fact that you're off mic and off camera, but they know everything that happens in there, I'm sure.
That seems like such a crime, but I bet you that they do. I'm sorry, what was the question again? I'm mom brain.
I was just asking if you were mad at the producers at that point, or if you guys ever openly talk about producer interference.
Like on our first date, we got lucky. We knew they let us ride in the car, together, and we got to listen to music and we were talking music. They normally keep you separate, and they would say like, we'd be talking about something and they'd be like, hold it, save it for camera, save it. It's like, well, how are we going to talk about this band we both like? So there's that, like they always try to keep you to save it. If you're talking too much before you start filming, they try to pull you apart. So, I mean, it's just present. There's a lot of interference. I mean, on our first date, they pulled me aside and they said, we really need you to start being vulnerable. America's not going to like you if you don't start sharing more vulnerable things about yourself. And I'm like, I'm just on the first date. Like, I'm trying to have a good time and I'm starving and I'm not eating.
They're telling you America's not going to like you. They use that phrase.
Yeah, it was very much so along those lines. And it was a female EP. And she was like, we need you. You're coming across like you need to be softer. You know, she was the same person that told me before the women tell all, you just need to go out there and be a girl. And I was like, okay. Like, so there's just
be a girl.
Yeah, I know. Like just be softer. But there's constant interference, but we never really had a chance to talk about it. But towards the end in Switzerland, I was like, I'm not going to say that. Like I started pushing back with the producers and then I got kind of like the backlash from them.
Yeah. The retribution.
So I'm assuming you have this off camera time with Ben. I'm assuming you solidify your relationship at this point. Were you ever having doubts that it would be you at this point? Did you ever consider that you could possibly be the Bachelorette?
So at that point, I remember going before our overnight dates, one of the EPs, when I just mentioned, they took me out we just were having like tea, like at that the night before or something. And she asked, would you consider being a bachelorette? And I felt so offended in the moment. Like, well, why would you ask me that? Like, it felt like a test. And I was like, no, I don't think I would. Honestly, I was like, after going through this whole process, it's not for me. And I felt like it would almost work against me. Even if I said, yes, I would, I felt like I didn't trust anybody at that point to say that. So, that was, I knew he told me like, it's you and I'm madly in love with you. But the night before the proposal, I started to second guess and I just thought, oh my gosh, what if he blindsides me? I need to be prepared. And I did start to second guess it after an interview with somebody who was really trying to spin my wheels up, and it worked.
Yeah,
I was like, I can't. I can't do this.
What was that interview like? How did they spin the wheels?
I think it was Pete Scalatar, and I didn't do a lot of interviews with him. In my mind, it was kind of like they made him seem like the biggest, highest up. And if you did an interview with him, it was like big time in my mind. And it just was like constantly like what asking me like, what are you going to do if it's not you? And like, if it's not you. And it was like, it was very like leading. Like, do you know something that I don't know? Like, you know, and it was just like, he was just really working me and pulling. I started getting upset and my whole thing was like, I don't want to cry on camera. And I started to cry and like get really upset. And I just felt very messed with like, this isn't for me, like stop manipulating me. And I just said, I can't interview anymore. And we called it. And then we went outside and he apologized and was like, I'm sorry. And then it makes you feel like, oh, this is a stressful situation. So even you're apologetic.
God, I wonder your conversation with the female EP asking if you want would be the bachelorette, I'm like, I wonder what your edit would have looked like if you had said yes. Because I feel like they would have wanted you to if they could.
I think so too.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe they would have given me a better edit, but that was so hard because America disliked me, but she was also talking smack about Ben to me, like that same sitting. She's like, you know, I forget what she said. She said something like, and I was like, really? Like she said something to me, like I didn't perceive him like that. And so I thought that was interesting, but who knows? Who knows,
maybe. Yeah, hindsight, I guess.
I would have loved that, honestly. Now, like a 30-year-old me, I would have like really enjoyed that experience.
Yeah, and you would have been great, I think. So talking about the Women Tell All, did you know that you were the first finalist to be in the Women Tell All?
I did. They told me that was kind of a big deal. I was like, you gotta pay me. Like I'm like I think they paid me like $2,000 so I could buy a dress and do all, you know, I had been like hiding in my apartment, couldn't really work. So yeah. And Alon coached me. Alon was my guy. He was my go-to.
Uh-huh. That's awesome. You got paid for it.
Yeah, I never have heard of anyone getting paid for Women Tell All.
I kind of bargained with them. You know, I was like, I'm gonna need something else. I need a new dress. And then Carrie, I think I bought it. Yeah, I bought my own dress for that. Carrie Fettman dressed me for the after the final rose. So.
Wow. And then you go to the finale. You get the second meeting of the family. It goes well. The red flag is brought up about the other girls not liking you in the house. Doesn't matter. You obviously win. Then at the after the final rose, immediately they bring up the tabloid rumors that Ben is having an affair. That's how they introduce you as a couple. So immediately they're just trying to tear you down. He broke off the engagement, but you guys are trying to get back together again and work everything out. And you essentially, both of you, start talking about the media coverage of your relationship and the villain edit as being the primary reason the relationship was so strained. What was that experience like when you come out of the show? And really up to that point, most couples, most ring winners and leads are kind of celebrated and most of the tabloids cover them favorably. But when you have it happen, it's the exact opposite. You're on the cover of every magazine as the villain of The Bachelor and all this stuff. What was that experience specifically like? And how long did it last?
That's a good question. Obviously very lackluster. The whole time, 2.5 months of filming, I knew we were going to end up together from pretty early on. And I like, you kind of daydream. I was like, how is this going to play out? In my mind, it was very positive. It was like, America loves you guys together. They're rooting for you. So to have it go how you thought it was going to go so far the other way, and also have him kind of have a fall from grace. Because this, mind you, the whole time it was me as the bad guy. Now it was like, wait, you're the bad guy too. So the roles flipped for us. Like I really had to just take his word for it or, you know, take it, just accept it. So I think that changed the dynamic a little bit too, because I think it meant a lot to him that like I stuck by his side. But by the end, I didn't know what we were going to talk about. It was pre-recorded. Obviously, I think the next season was when they did live. I kind of wish it was live. I feel like they cut some things out that might have been good for our story. But it just, I remember feeling sad. I remember feeling very sad that this was our tale and it was like us against the world and it didn't turn out the way I had hoped it would. So I was sad. Yeah. My parents were sad. I remember my dad sent me a text that was kind of like, you know, hang in there.
I literally cannot even imagine. Like we have experienced some of the feedback from Bachelor Nation and on a much smaller scale and it can be intense.
Oh, I can do it now, like with what the contestants are going through. I know you guys talk about a lot of social media and that stuff. Like, I mean, I received a lot of hate online and just through my email and stuff, and it's brutal. I don't know how. I don't think I could do it now.
Do you think that there's any? I mean, there are some relationships that still exist from the modern era, like Michelle Young and Nate Olakoya. But do you really think that any of these relationships can last unless they are given just like the best edit, which Michelle Young and Nate Olakoya were? If you look at like Susie Evans and a Clayton Eckerd from this most recent season 26, they got a terrible edit. Both of them were kind of villainized in it. And now they're trying to work through almost kind of a similar situation as what you and Ben Flanick had, but I think yours is worse for sure. They just happen to be in a modern era where it's like all over social media constantly. Do you think relationships can actually last from the show in this modern era?
That's a really good question. And I think that there's two theories that I have. I think that the people that really embrace social media and they see this as like a business, 100%, I think that they'll stay in it and they'll, as vapid as it is to me, they'll make it work and they'll make their money and maybe even for years before the relationship disintegrates. I think that's one way, but I think like in my case, and I know he would probably agree with me, was we really tried to make a relationship work. Like we didn't work out, not because of the show stuff, because we got to a point that we realized we weren't compatible, but we gave it, I hate to say it, dating in the real world, but like, you know, I would say like, give it like a year and then like shitter it off the pot. And that's kind of what we did, was like, I've seen enough to know that this probably isn't going to, this relationship isn't going to stand the test of time. So I think like Katie Thurston and Blake, right? They realized pretty quickly in the real world that they weren't working out and they just nipped it in the butt. So for me, I mean, we really had a good stretch while we were trying to make it work. I was hopeful. And then the long distance, I think, ultimately killed us.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a huge problem in general.
Oh, yeah.
Is that people don't live in the same place.
Yeah, it was hard. And I was doing all the traveling and I became resentful. And so, yeah, I don't know if that's a good answer, but I think, yeah. I think that there's like the real life, like, and then like the Instagram. So I think it's just whatever people's intentions are. But yeah, Clayton and Susie definitely, I think that if they play it and they spin it and people start to see them in the real world, like, I think that they'll jump on board because that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, people forget the hatred, I think. And then they're just like, oh, they are kind of cute. Their pizza reviews are funny. You have mentioned multiple of these other seasons. Do you watch pretty regularly now?
Yeah, my husband and I, we watch together. He's cute. He's like, wifey wine Monday. I make charcuterie. And we watch pretty religiously. He's like, we're excited for Bachelor in Paradise. And it's fun because I'm on the other end now. We're both pretty snarky. So it's like, it's just fun for us to like have a little date, you know?
Yeah.
Has he seen your season?
No. Mm-mm.
No.
He never really watched before me. He just knew, oh, this girl from Phoenix, she was, you know, and I popped up on his Instagram feed. That's how we kind of, he started liking my photos. That's how we met.
He's got to see it at some point. It's a work of art. I mean.
No, I don't want to talk about it. Like my books. No, like, cause it's like, you know, I remember we were moving into our house and I found like a poster. I bought some vintage poster in Switzerland. And I was like, I'm thinking about hanging this. And he's like, are you serious? Like, no, we're not hanging where you got engaged in our house.
Oh man. Well, I'm glad I've seen it.
No, I downloaded them. I watched a couple of them when I wrote my book. It's old school.
I have a question. I listened to your most recent Reality Steve interview and you talked about reshoots for the skiing date, and I just wanted to clarify, this is a group date that they reshot the skiing portion after the season had already completed shooting?
That's what I heard. Yeah, my friends, Jacqueline was there. They flew them all back up there and they had to put their outfits back on. I was under the impression that they did the snow and the whole thing from what he was telling me, because from what Jacqueline said and then from what he said, but somebody said that it wasn't that. I don't know if they were just scared to admit that, but I know that they flew those girls back up there, made him put their outfits back on.
But also they flew Ben there and made him go on this date and pretend to be interested in them after he had already proposed to you. You had accepted, the relationship was already solidified. The game was over and they're like, go back and fake like you still have to do this one group date.
And he was so annoyed. And I was too. He called me the night before we talked about it. And I just remember thinking like, are they trying to like manipulate the outcome? Like I felt like that. And I was under the impression it was like something with the audio or they needed some more or they needed more. But he was annoyed. I was annoyed.
God, that's insane.
Yeah. I feel like you can tell sometimes the ITMs are like filmed afterwards because people's hair will be totally different. And they'll be like
night one, like you'd have to do the night one interviews all over again. And like, they're so tired at the end, but like, you know, they have a makeup artist the first night. So if you see they look tired or makeup looks totally different, that's a tell.
Interesting.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
You also said that you have reached out to villains that have come after you for support because you didn't have that support. How did you decide to do that? What has that experience been like to like bond with other villains?
You know, I did. I reached out to Olivia. I've reached out to Chad Johnson. I just felt like he needed some help.
I think that was a good instinct.
Yeah. And I think like Olivia and I have a good friendship. I check in on her every once in a while. You know, like for example, on this season, Chene, I asked my husband, I was like, you know, I'm thinking about reaching out to her. Like, but he's like, I don't know, Courtney, I think you should leave that, let that one lie. And so I didn't reach out, but I have thought about it because I do kind of feel bad for her. And if I had to guess, I bet you she's the one who has read this book.
Oh, I love this. You're trying to guess who Clues coached.
It's brilliant. If you ever need a backup, let me know. But I think that today I feel for her. I should probably reach out to her. But
I think you both would be a great coaching team.
I think that, the fact that she's coaching is amazing. I seriously would have, had I known, I would have definitely utilized this.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully players, I know some players are utilizing it. I'll leave it at that. Definitely there are some in game currently who are utilizing it. But you also mentioned in your Reality Steve interview that some male villains have slid into your DMs.
Male villains? Oh, from other seasons?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, other guys, but when I was single and living in Santa Monica, a lot of other contestants slid in for sure.
Yeah. That's kind of how it goes now. I mean, that's just like as soon as you come off the show, the rest of the dating pool from Bachelor Nation is just like in your DMs immediately. But I have to imagine that you were probably in the first era of that pre-Paradise.
Yeah. You know, I think that was before screenshots. Now I would be like very wary of that. Like, I don't think screenshotting were around then, at least that I know of. But I definitely, like, I met Nick Viall. He hit me up and he came to my house in Santa Monica and we sat outside and chatted. And it was very much so like villain to villain. Like, that was before he went on to be The Bachelor, all that stuff. And I will say, like, there's an instant like ease or with anyone who's been on the show, as long as you don't have some But we just chatted about it. There was nothing salacious about it or creepy. I didn't get the sense that he was like hitting on me. We just talked about our experience and he left and that was it. I never saw him again, never talked to him again.
How much of that conversation, I'm sorry, you just opened a can of worms with me because I think Nick Vial is one of the greatest players of all time. What was that conversation like? Were you talking about game strategy and how to avoid certain things, what the producers did to you? What was in that conversation?
I think it was just like, honestly, like talking about being yourself. And like, we talked about a lot. I know Alon and him became very close. To me, he sounds like Alon when he talks. I think has adopted his inflection and the way he talks. And Alon is a genius. So we talked a lot about Alon, and just kind of, you know, just the show. I mean, it was so long ago, but yeah, so I met him and a couple other people at events and stuff, but I liked him. We didn't form a bond. I think part of me at the back of my mind was like, maybe we'll really hit it off. But I had him come to my house because I also didn't want to be out in the public. I remember with that wherewithal of like, people can take pictures of us and I didn't want that.
Right.
What do you think makes Alon a genius?
I think he is a genius. I think he is a genius, like certified, like, I think I don't think he would admit to it, but he's just a very, very smart person. And he's very good at, I don't know if it's just that he thinks ahead or if he's just that smart and he runs on a very high octane, but yeah.
After your time in game, you write a New York Times bestseller, I Didn't Come Here to Make Friends, Confessions of a Reality Show Villain. When did you decide to do this book? Were you journaling throughout your experience with that in mind?
Yeah, you know what? I think I decided to write the book when we broke up and he said something about like, I should have listened to the girls in an interview or something like that. Oh, and it was like a dagger to my heart. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's it. I am done being the bad guy. I am going to share my side of the story, I'm going to raise hell to do it. And that was the moment I decided to write it. I did journal during my season. It was pretty weak sauce. I mean, it wasn't very consistent, but it's actually kind of sad. I had a really hard time with not having a sense of time and like a calendar. So I would like try to make calendars and like a countdown for the end.
I mean, this is literally like what you see people in movies doing when they're in prison and they're like putting the check marks on the wall of how much time they spend. That's unreal.
It's like kind of sad when you look back at it. It's like, there is that part where you're just so, and I remember I bought a watch in the airport because I was like, I was constantly like, what time is it? This like a little cheapo watch because like I just had no sense of day, time or whatever. But yeah. So then I decided to write the book and that was, I mean, I did everything leading up to that moment to get there. I did text Mike Fleiss saying we were close. I had a friendship with him saying, I brought the ring back to him too. That's a fun tidbit. I drove it to Malibu. And even though I staged a photo shoot making it look like I went to Neil Lane. Everyone, when you break up, they want to know, where's the ring? So sorry if I'm yours.
I definitely didn't think Mike Fleiss was the one who collected the rings.
Neither did I. That puts a whole new element to this, the entire franchise.
I got like 12 in the divorce or something like that.
Yeah.
Looking back, I wish I would have been like, screw you guys. You put me through the ringer. I'm keeping it. What are you going to do? Sorry, I'm like totally yard selling. I'm going back to the book. So I texted him and I said, hey, I'm going to write this book. It's not going to be a bachelor bashel, but I want to share my side of the story. If there's anything you can do to help me, you know, he said, absolutely. Just very short. Like, I mean, he was like, yeah, you know, I'll do what I can. So long story short, I get the book drafted, like the intro, I write it, find a ghostwriter, send it to five, the top, you know, publishers in New York. And I got four no's and I was crying with my ghostwriter, my, you know, she helped me write the book. And then I got a call from HarperCollins and they said, we want you to fly out here. We'll meet you. And I was like, I'm not going to fly out there. That's going to hurt even more if I don't get it. So we did an interview like this, over the phone and they said, okay, we're going to offer you a book deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was like, I guess the first, my point is never give up because, and then I got the calls from Warner Brothers and I said, you're going to have to call HarperCollins attorney. I mean, I was really the first one to be able to pull it off. And to me, that feels really good because I felt like I needed to share my side of the story because I just felt so, you know.
What was that like when you're having to deal with these legal battles and stuff? I've always wondered this about leads who write books and high level players who write books. Obviously Warner Brothers has some idea of like what you can and can't have in there. And was that a big thing? Is there a lot that didn't make the book because Warner Brothers said you can't have it in there?
So I was shocked at how much did stay in there and what had to be taken out. Like the legal vetting of the book was pretty grueling. I must have read through it 5 times. Their attorney did, but like little details, like if somebody's not in the public eye, like you can't use their full name, like learning that kind of stuff, certain things, details like that. But the show secrets was, obviously I said, I'd let them read it. And then they called and they kind of said like, these are some things, and they pushed back and said, no, that's pertinent to the story, or why can't she say that, you know? So yeah, there was definitely a little bit of that, but very like small stuff, like changing my parents' house for hometown dates, like setting up that, like things that you'd be like, well, okay, I guess they didn't want that out there. Like little details like that, but not something that's like a very big detail.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, we did this with our book as well. We had to, you know, do legal passes and be like, in our opinion.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah. In our opinion was something that we just basically added to the beginning of every sentence.
And now we kind of add it to how we talk.
I'm so proud of you guys. I listened to the Audible. I'm so proud of you guys for doing that too. That was, I will say, one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life is read the book.
The audiobook? Yeah, that was a lot harder than I anticipated. How do you feel about the world that has grown around The Bachelor? I know, you know, in your time there were blogs and stuff, but now there's like an industry unto itself, podcasting, Chad and I, et cetera.
You know, I'm not surprised. I think the show has legs and...
Me too.
Phenomenon that's like, it's not going away. I don't see it going away. I love that it's like turned into this, like this game. This is brilliant to me that you've been able to come up with this because it's like, wow, you're right. I will say that, like, I'm like, God, I wish they would mix it up a little bit. The romantic in me wishes they would get back to like the winemakers and the, you know, I wish that they would say like, hey, no Instagram for a year after, like see what people's true were, you know, because I think people have really about me, but I had no Instagram fame or influencing. That wasn't a thing. I mean, we got paid to do events, but that was even just a bonus. I didn't even know we'd get invited places. So I worry about people's mental health. I will say that. Having been through being the villain and even like Olivia talking to her, it's not for everyone to get put under the scrutiny. And like, for me, I'm way too sensitive. You know, I just wanted to put my head in the sand. So I worry about that for people, just the mental health and like the backlash of the show. And I hope that they have some, that they keep an eye on that. I would say that.
That would be an interesting rule to have no social media for a year.
I think so too. Like I feel like they need to at some point, like, I mean, they have to know, but at the same time, they also are like little soldiers promoting the show.
Yes. Yeah. I think the opposite should be done. I think you should be able to have your phone in the show.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, that would create a whole other world of problems. Can you imagine?
Yes. That would be a very interesting show. I think if they want to update it and bring it into 2022, I think that's the direction to go.
I wish I would have brought a phone on the show. They don't ever go through my bags. Looking back, I wish I would have had a secret compartment in my suitcase where I had a phone off, fully charged, ready to go. To just boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, smuggling in a phone would be great.
What would you have done?
I would have called people every chance I got. You know, your support system.
So how do you feel about this next season coming up? Getting into some of our final questions here, the double bachelorettes.
It's an interesting idea. I really like Susie. I'm sorry, it's not Susie. What's her name? Remind me.
Gabby? Rachel?
Rachel and Gabby. Yeah, I love them both. I think they're great. I think that no matter what, I know Mike said that we're not going to pin them against each other. There's going to be those teasers that you're like, they did exactly that. I think it's a recipe for that happening. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a ripoff for the girls in the sense that they don't get their like full day in court. But I'll be watching and I can't wait to see the guys that they pick. I think it's also hard for the contestants too.
Totally. The game is different.
Yeah. You have to have a different strategy.
You have two first audiences. Did you ever get called for Paradise? Did they ever ask you to come on?
They did. So in the right around the time my book came out, I said, I'll do the next show, you know, just playing nice. Just like, I really want to get this book out there. And I think that was appealing. And then I think at the end of the day, they realized it was a conflict of interest because they didn't want other contestants to feel like I would write a book about them. And I was glad because I was dating and I wanted to date somebody normal in LA. And I was actually kind of just started dating somebody. And I was like, well, I might have to do this show. And he was like, I will tell you that, like guys that aren't part of the franchise, they're not really into it. Like, you know.
Oh my God. That is like, I can't imagine having an opportunity like that. Somebody you're dating is like, I might go to Paradise. I would immediately be like, okay, let's do this. Here's how you're going to fucking crush everyone.
You would kill it. You might be supportive, right?
Oh my God. Yes. I would totally be supportive. I'd help build the strategy.
Dream come true.
Yeah. I redeemed myself. And I was like, it was part of my thing. I said I would do it. I mean, but luckily I didn't have to. And
shocked they didn't put you on stand.
The guys that were going on were calling and I talked to a couple of them and it was, and girls that were going on were writing me and like strategizing. And that was before people really talked about it, but I definitely was open to it. Mm-hmm.
Do you, okay. I have two more final questions. One, you read our book. Is there anything that you feel that we got wrong about the process?
I don't think so at all. No, I loved your book. I mean, some of it for me, I was like, you know, like, I think this is a book for Bachelor fans, especially because it's so smart and there's things that you're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, or people that have never seen the show should definitely read this book. But having been through it, you know, it was like, some of the stuff I already knew, but no, I mean, I think you guys got this spot on and it's such a fun read. I mean, you guys have put a lot of work into this.
Yeah. I mean, we can't thank you enough for reading it. And we're obviously thrilled that you like it.
Thank you for sending it to me. Like I said, I was reading this like, they have got to do a game or something. You guys could probably parlay this into some like gambling. I don't
know. Yes.
We'll see what we can do.
The new casino. My other last question was, you are a fan of the show. You've watched other seasons. Do you have a favorite season?
Let's see. Favorite season. I really like Ben Higgins' season. I thought that was like the year that it kind of, I thought he was really cute. He's a cute guy. He just seemed really nice and likable. And that was like, he told both girls he loved them. Who else has there been? Pilot Pete was kind of interesting. He was just kind of like, you know, this like kind of dopey kid. you know what I mean? They're like, this isn't going to end well. And like, just, I like that one.
Yeah.
I like the villains. I do. I relate to him. And like, even watching Shanae,
yeah.
Like, oh my God, they gassed her up. Like, I think that maybe she drank a lot, you know?
Yes, I agree.
In some of the interviews, like, I'm like, oh, honey, like, you got overserved, you know? So I feel for her, but I did really enjoy this last season.
Yeah, as did we. Well, we can't thank you enough again for doing this. Yes. This is beyond a dream come true for us to get to talk to one of the greatest players who's ever lived, really defined the game for a certain period of time.
Oh, gosh. Well, thanks for having me. And that's really nice to hear that. I feel like old hat. So I'm glad that you guys enjoyed my work.
Oh, my God.
More than you can possibly imagine.
Huge fans. And I'm glad to see that, you know, despite the villain edit, things seem to have turned around. You seem to be thriving. So that makes us happy as well.
Thankful for, I will say this to anybody, I would not be where I'm at today if it wasn't for the show. I wouldn't have met my husband. He wouldn't have seen me on Instagram. He wouldn't have liked my photos.
Did he slide into your DMs? Is that how you met?
I slid into his, yeah.
Wow.
I've been liking my photos for like 2 years. And
long game.
Yeah, we've been together for 3 years. We have 2 kids. And he wouldn't have known who I was. And we wouldn't be together. So in some ways, the show really did change my life for the best.
The process does work.
It does work. Yes, the process does work. It just took a long time.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us. We can't thank you enough. And good luck with everything you're doing now.
Where can people find you if they want to follow more Courtney content?
I'm at Bug Robertson. I want to change my handle to my married name. I don't know if that's a good idea. Chad, maybe we could talk offline. But yeah.
Some consulting.
Yeah, I'm like, can I? Should I? But I'm Bug Robertson, and I do real estate. If anyone's looking to move to Arizona, my husband helps me out too. We do that. I do that full time. So market's hot right now, guys. That's all I got, really. Just being a mom, and I do recipes and share my favorite things on Instagram just for kind of shits and giggles.
Yeah, everyone should go follow Courtney Robertson. I mean, she literally is like the Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle, I feel like, of our beloved game. You know, just happened to be like a couple of years before the real Instagram boom, before Paradise started happening and you started seeing people like Ashley Iaconetti going to Paradise and getting 1 million followers. But I think had you played the game just a few years later, you would have well over 1 million followers, I think.
I know. That seems like a lot of pressure too. I wouldn't want to let the followers down. I'd be like, I already overthink posting stuff. So
yeah. Well, once again, thanks for joining us and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm here if you need anything, and I hope you have a great day.
Still reeling from this incredible interview with Courtney Robertson Preciado. I mean, my bucket list is complete now. Clues, I don't know what to tell you.
I still got a certain Nick Vial on that list to interview, but the things we learned in this interview were incredible.
He won't let you have it.
I'm getting closer to him. You heard Courtney talking about how she interviewed him, right?
Yeah, that sounds like you are getting closer for sure. No, but thank you, Courtney, so much for coming on the podcast, making our day, our week, our month, our year. Now I'm just the Friends theme song.
Yeah, but we sincerely cannot thank you enough. This was an absolute dream come true. And hopefully we can get to talk to you again in the near future. But thanks everybody for joining us.
Yes.
We hope you enjoyed this continuation of Gore Girl Summer. We got some other incredible interviews lined up in the very near future. And before we go, as always, what is that Dwabat?
It has been 7,330 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then